The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
From the disappearance of the Dublin schoolboy Philip Kearns in the 1980s to the murder of Justine Valdez in 2018, my next guest's expert and unique take on some of the most high-profile crimes in Ireland has led to his podcast becoming hugely successful since it launched late last year. John Sweetman is a former Garda forensic expert who now presents the podcast Lines of Inquiry, which has been listened to by more than a million people. And John is here. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Claire.
And congratulations on the success of the show. I know you have a third series coming up, haven't
you?
Next month. And we'll talk about that. But as a former guard, like, you will know the impact that these crimes have on the families, on the victims. So can you tell me about that decision-making process around going in to make a podcast about it? Because I know that you're particularly sensitive to the impact that, talking about it again will have on people.
Yeah, like, as I say, the podcast just came out of the blue for me. I was contacted and I thought maybe just they wanted me for an interview or maybe some background information, but no, they wanted a host. And I was very, you know, I was delighted to be asked, and I take it very seriously what we do. And in relation to going back to those cases, and you have to be very mindful of the victims. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with these stories or these episodes, very often the case has a conclusion, be it a courtroom thing or a conviction or whatnot. But the victims or people affected and their families, they don't have closure, really.
It's
a life sentence, basically. So it doesn't matter whether the cases are decades old or relatively recent. You have to be very mindful that you're talking about real people and you know, terrible things that have happened to them.
But I could hear that in, like, I listened to the Philip Kearns episode yesterday, and I felt as though Philip and his family were very much to the forefront.
Yes.
In what you presented. You're mindful of that clearly when you're making these.
Yes. Like, I mean, to say the team that does the scripts, and I write some of them, and, you know, we all have input into the scripts, and okay, we have to be accurate in portraying the facts of the case and the procedural aspects of it. But more important is, again, and I don't want to be repeating myself, but it's being respectful of the people affected. And, you know, it's not simply just me sitting there and reading a story. Like, I become invested in it myself. And, you know, the Philip Kearns one, as you mentioned, like, Philip would have been around my age now if he hadn't disappeared. So I take that stuff on board when we record them. Mm-hmm. And I hope and I think that it comes across in the episodes that there is genuine empathy there.
Well, there's the empathy, but there's also your expert view. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit about your career in forensics because, as you've said in the past, you're the one who went behind the cordon.
Yes,
you know, you're the one in the point. So you have been there on these scenes.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been to my fair share of them, not as much as many of my colleagues. But I went into the Garda Technical Bureau after 4 years of service, which I was still quite junior in the Guards. And for a lot of people of my service at the time, you'd be the one outside the tape, maybe taking names and, you know, keeping a register of the scene or whatever. So it was a great privilege to be able to go, as you say, beyond the tape and to be involved in the forensic aspect of investigations into serious crime. But that's only a small part. Like, you know, it is an important part, the forensic end of it, but it's only a small part of what goes on in these investigations. Mm-hmm. But I would hope that because my experience in that field brings a little bit of authenticity, a bit more authenticity to the podcast.
Of course it does. You know. Of course it does. And you can hear that coming through as well in them. So just to explain to people, like, forensics is looking for the unsaid, isn't it? It's looking for the mistake or what has been unintentionally left behind at a crime scene.
Yeah, like, obviously things that a perpetrator of a crime mightn't be conscious of, be it fingerprints or fibers and DNA and all those little things. But, you know, forensic, I think, if memory serves, it covers a wide, the definition covers a wide variety of things, mm-hmm. and it really just means for presentation in court. But, you know, in the public domain, it means, you know, the scientific aspect of crime scene investigation, be it fingerprints, ballistics, that kind
Has
of stuff.
Has it changed a lot? Did it change a lot over your years working in forensics?
It has changed in some respects in that more technologies have come along that make it easier to do your job. But mm-hmm. the nuts and bolts of it is still the same. It doesn't matter if you've got more specialised equipment to detect things. It's still down to the individual expert to evaluate, you know, the evidential value of any evidence that's retrieved from a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been advances, obviously, in equipment and technologies over the years, but the nuts and bolts work is still the same. You know what I mean?
And does experience count for a lot in that, you know, once you have earned your stripes, are you able to see more, you know?
You never get to a stage where you know everything, you know. And I was very lucky in that within the Garda Technical Bureau, there was so many people working there, some of them working there for decades. And you were constantly learning because you'd pick something up from everybody. And not necessarily in your own section. You could be out at a scene and, like I say, I was at scenes as a fingerprint expert. But you'd be listening to what the photographer's saying and what the mapper's saying and what the ballistics person is saying. So you're constantly learning, and then you can impart that maybe down the line when somebody new comes into the section. But we were very lucky, and obviously I was only having a pint with an ex-colleague of mine there not too long ago, and he joined the fingerprint section in 1972, which was the year I was born. But we still... We crossed paths, and that wealth of knowledge is just priceless.
Because mm-hmm. when you went into the Guards first, you weren't sure after you graduated that it was the life for you.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I had a rude awakening. I kept getting through all the stages of the, you know, the application processes, and before I knew it, I was in Temple Moor and realising that, hang on a second, this might not be what you wanted. Because I remember coming home from school after finishing the leaving and, you know, tearing off the school uniform and saying, that's it, never wearing a uniform again, never going to be part of an organisation, all this sort of stuff. And here I was, just a couple of years later in the Guards. And it wasn't for me. It wasn't that the job didn't suit me. I didn't really think I suited the job, the frontline work mm-hmm. that Gardaí do. But again, luck was shining on me, and I managed to get into the Technical Bureau, into the fingerprint section.
So did you know... Obviously, you applied for that role, so you must have seen it and went, yeah,
really aware that it was there until, you know, circumstances meant that one day I had to be in there with a colleague of mine to deliver a crime scene exhibit. And I immediately had my eyes opened and I said, this is for me, because it spoke to, you know, I was always involved in art and had an eye for detail and ability to concentrate and work on my own. So it was really...
It spoke, you know, to that side of your brain.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so did you have a happy career once you got into forensics?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was brilliant. I spent 25 years in the Bureau, be it, first of all, I was 10 years as a fingerprint expert, and then a further 16 years in documents and handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And the people I've met, the friends I've made, and, you know, the experiences I've had, be it through the brilliant training that we were given, and obviously going to crime scenes and giving evidence in all tiers of court and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So I think I've been very lucky.
But I would imagine now, and tell me if I'm wrong, that some of those cases that you dealt with linger with you, you know, when you cannot fix something, but you have to walk away. How does that sit with you, or how did it?
It was easy enough at the time, because you could be at a particular crime scene for days, even longer, and then processing all the work that comes from that. But as soon as that was finished, there was always something else to move on to. So your mind was always occupied.
Mm-hmm.
What I found now since being involved in the Lines of Inquiry podcast is I tend to think back on these cases more, because I'm somewhat removed from the whole Garda mentality way of
You've got thinking. Time now.
I've got time, and as I don't think I'm as insulated as I was. You know, it's say if I'm researching for an episode or reviewing a script for an episode or something like that, I've more time to kind of get involved with it, mm-hmm. and not just with the forensic aspect of it. You know, the background to these cases, to the people involved and stuff like that. So I found it more so now to say if I was writing a script, the Justine Valdez script would be an example. I find it more difficult now to kind of switch off and move away from it.
Because that's that you worked on that case, didn't you?
Just in a small aspect, but I was involved in it. Yeah.
Because there was a note involved in that, and you were involved in handwriting analysis at that time.
Yes.
So you found when you revisited the case for the Lines of Inquiry mm-hmm. podcast that it had more of an impact on you?
Very much so, because I wasn't just looking at it from my, you know, my expert background, like the handwriting aspect of it. I had to look at the whole case, and particularly Justine's family or parents and that stuff. And I found it more difficult to kind of walk away from it when I was finished.
It was a very tough case. I think anyone who's aware of the details of it know about the heartbreak around it for her family. A devastating case, but it is one of the many that you've covered. So the new season is coming out in April.
April 14th, I believe, yeah.
But in the meantime, people can join the over 1 million people, which is an extraordinary figure.
It's just mad.
who've listened to Lines of Inquiry. If they go to the Go Loud app, they'll find it there.
Yeah.
Or wherever you get your podcast from, as we say, in all the best places. Mm-hmm. John, a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you very much for being
with us. That is John Sweetman. And a reminder that the podcast is called Lines of Inquiry, which is returning for season 3. But there's plenty there for you to listen to.
The Claire Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.